Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm glad that you could be with us. I'm Bill McKeever, the founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we were discussing the importance of professing Christians to be ambassadors for Christ, and we were giving an example of back in the 1920s when the phrase, every member a missionary, was coined by David O. McKay, a Mormon president, the ninth president of the Mormon Church, where he was emphasizing the fact that every member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is supposed to be a missionary and supposed to proclaim what Mormons to believe is the restored gospel. Well, they're really not unique in that. Christians are supposed to be missionaries as well. In fact, Charles Spurgeon, a very famous pastor in England, in London, made the comment that he said, if you as a Bible-believing Christians, if you are not a missionary, you're an imposter. We have an incredible message that needs to be told, especially if you live in this particular culture. Now, here's the scenario. You have a couple of missionaries knock on your door. What do you do? What are you supposed to say? Do you have a game plan already ready to go, or are you just behave on the fly? So what do we do with that, Eric?
Well, this is a hard one because it's very scary. When you open up the door and you either see two Mormon missionaries or you see perhaps some Jehovah's Witnesses, I mean, I think right away most of us think, oh no, what do I do? And you just forget everything. I think, as you said, Bill, you have to have a game plan. What are some questions you can ask the missionaries at your door that might get them to think? We need to understand how important it is that we bear a testimony ourselves, because we do have that obligation.
But some Christians would say, but wait a minute, doesn't the Bible say that we're not allowed to have these people come into our homes? And certainly the most comfortable place to talk about these kind of issues would be inside the house, not between a screen door. So are we as Christians allowed to let them in? And the passage that we often hear is 2 John verses 10 and 11.
Let me read that. If there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive not him into your house, neither bid him Godspeed, for he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds.
So the question is John really referring to Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons knocking on our door? And the obvious answer is absolutely not. Why? There were no Mormons and there were no Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on doors back in the first century. So obviously John doesn't have them in mind. But what does he have in mind? What is the context of 2 John verses 10 and 11? And I think that's important. And there are biblical scholars that have addressed this very clearly. In the book, More Hard Sayings of the New Testament, Christian writer Peter David says this. He said, the situation in 2 John 9 through 11 appears to fit best in a group of house churches, not an individual. You would agree, Eric, that a lot of people tend to look at the first century church very much like they look at the modern church, and that's not the way the church looked.
There's not a church on every corner in Jerusalem. In fact, back in those days, in the first four centuries, until Constantine made Christianity okay to believe in the 300s, Christianity was underground. And so they had what were called house churches. And according to the historians, there would be 20 to 40 believers that would be in a house church, perhaps. And they did not have the church buildings. Those church buildings that when we go to Israel and other places like that were not being built until after the fourth century. So these smaller groups would meet in these neighborhood homes, and we see that when Paul is talking to the different churches, he would talk about to the house church leaders and their groups. In Romans chapter 16, 5 and following, he lists them by name. He does the same thing in Corinthians and Colossians and Philemon.
And so we shouldn't automatically assume that he's talking about individuals at all. Basically, what is being talked about in 2 John is that John is warning the young churches, do not allow false teachers to come in and teach your flock that are meeting in these particular homes that we've just discussed. It's talking about having these guys come in almost as itinerant preachers. If they are going to come into your home and they're going to teach false doctrine, first of all, they shouldn't be allowed. And second of all, you're not supposed to bid them Godspeed in the message that they take. So when the young missionaries come to our door, we shouldn't look at this verse as applying to them. In fact, I know personally, I have had many missionaries in my home. I have come to know firsthand many of these young guys, and a lot of them are very zealous for their faith. I commend them for that. I certainly don't agree with their message. I think their message is very harmful, but it's not only harmful to those that they are talking to, it's harmful to them as well. And because I feel that it's harmful to them as well, I want to talk to them about the message that they believe to be true. And what better way for me to do that than to say, hey guys, come on in, let's spend some time, get to know them more on a personal level. Hey, if it's a hot day outside, why not, you know, give them something to drink and be hospitable with them. I personally don't look at the Mormon missionaries as the enemy. I look at them as people who need to know what the gospel has to say, just as I needed to know what the gospel had to say.
When we go to places like Manti and do missionary work out there, and we meet former missionaries, who, or return missionaries, they call them RMs, they oftentimes are very receptive to our message in the sense that they'll be willing to talk to us, where a lot of people get really angry, and they say, hey, I did the same thing these guys are trying to do out here in the streets. And so I think we need to understand that we are humans, they are humans, we can be cordial, but Bill, getting back to this idea of the church allowing somebody to come in and give a message that's contrary to the gospel, not only does John talk about this in the second epistle, he talked about it in the first epistle, chapter 2, verses 22 and 23. He says, if anybody denies the personality of God, and we can take this as far as his humanity goes, because Jesus was 100% human, also his deity, he was 100% God. If anybody goes after that and denies either one of those parts and has a different Jesus, as 2 Corinthians 11:4 says, then this turns out to be not the Jesus that we're preaching. And as Paul talked about in Galatians 1:8-9, he says there can be false gospels. Just because someone says that they're Christian doesn't necessarily make them Christian. We have to look and see what are the particulars of their doctrines. And if those doctrines disagree, we can't allow them to possibly, letting the wolves into the sheep pen and allowing them to do damage that a good pastor is not going to allow to happen.
Yeah, so basically what John is trying to get across is if you were a pastor of a church, for instance, and let's say in a modern church setting, you don't purposely allow false teachers to come in. Now, what do you do with a debate situation, Eric? I've been to many churches where they will actually have debates between people of different viewpoints. I don't really see a problem with that because the false teaching is being addressed. But if the false teaching is not properly being addressed, in other words, the speaker is being allowed to get away with saying certain things unchallenged, I would say that's a violation of 2 John 10.
Absolutely. If you have two people who it's known going in are going to be giving it their best shot, and in a cordial way, you shake hands before a debate. William Lane Craig is excellent at doing those kinds of debates, and he's done a number of them. James White as well, our friend. Then you understand you're going into a place where you're trying to hear the best of both views. But if it's something where either you give the person the pulpit and let him share his message of peace or whatever else it is, and there's no counter rebuttal, I think you're possibly going to fool people. David says this as well, Bill. He says, it's wise for leaders to be assured of the orthodoxy of visitors before giving them a platform from which they can spread their views, even the platform of an official welcome as a visiting Christian leader. Christian hospitality stops where danger to the well-being of the church begins. Love does not go to the extent of endangering one's fellow Christians. That's important there. That's key. Nor of allowing those who deny the Lord one loves to peddle their wares in that Lord's church. And that's on pages 229 and 230 of Hard Sayings of the New Testament.
I think we should also mention the fact that John Stott, a Christian theologian, also writing the Tyndale New Testament Commentary, page 215, said, Christians may surely welcome and entertain someone who holds false views and will seek to bring him to a better mind. It is those who are engaged in the systematic dissemination of lies, dedicated missionaries of error, to whom we may give no encouragement. And I think we should also mention at this point, too, that if you don't feel comfortable allowing these young men into your home to talk to them, then certainly don't feel like you have to. But if you feel confident that you can have a conversation with them and be a good ambassador for the Lord, right, then by all means. I know I have had just extremely good conversations with missionaries. And you know, for us especially, it's almost like good PR, because many times the missionaries are fed this information that evangelical Christians don't like them, and they're actually hateful towards them. This gives you a good chance to show that that's not true. And oftentimes after I've had a conversation with the missionaries, I'll even ask them that. I'll say, did you get any impression in my conversation with you that somehow that I don't like you as people? And of course, they'll always say, well, no, of course not. I says, okay, good. I want to make sure that you understand that my differences here are purely theological. I have nothing against you as individuals. And I want to get that thought across.
I think one of the ways to get missionaries to come into your home is to ask them, hey, would you like to come over for dinner? Because a lot of we've had great success doing that. I know our friend Randy Sweet has had a number of missionaries come to his home because there's something relaxing about eating together. And so having them come over, a lot of these guys are living on peanut butter and jelly. They don't really have a lot of money because they are putting their own money into this, and they've saved probably all their lives. And so having a home-cooked meal can certainly be a place where you can ask some honest questions. Don't go in defrauding people and making it sound like you're wanting to possibly join the church. I think that's an error a lot of Christians will make.
That's a good point, because I have heard some Christians say, well, I act like I don't know anything about the church. And I'm not saying you have to play your whole deck of cards here, but certainly you don't have to go out of your way to deceive them into thinking you know absolutely nothing. Usually they'll ask you if you've ever heard about the church. And I say, oh, yeah. I usually say, you can't be a responsible person living in Utah and not do some kind of study on what the Mormon church believes. So I'm not going to tell them, well, I've written so many books and I speak on this topic all the time. I don't have to do that, but I'm going to let them know, yeah, I have done some study on this. Let's talk about it.
And real quick, Bill, maybe having some questions you want to find out from their perspective. What do you think about, or do you believe, or why do you believe? Those kinds of questions can be real informative for you to be able to understand where they're coming from.
Basically, what we're saying, Christian, is don't let a good opportunity pass you by. If you have a chance to talk to somebody about the gospel, then certainly take advantage of that situation. And don't think that the Mormon missionaries are exempt from this. They need to hear what you needed to hear, and hopefully you can use that to share with them.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.